I started with wide-eyed optimism with my friends saying, what we'll do is we'll say 3, 2, 1, and then everybody says sync.
Hello, haha.
Yeah, and so that would happen, and that would work the first time, and then they would just randomly start shouting sync.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, well, any time when I flubbed the script, someone would then wait a few seconds for me to restart, get halfway through my sentence, and then yell sync! Because they're monsters, Jen, they're monsters. Hi, how are you doing? I'm doing all right, thank you. This is List Envy, and I'm Mark Stedman. So what do you need to know about this? Well, this is the podcast where I collaborate with a guest to build a definitive or canonical top five list on a topic that my guest chooses. Now, as you've just heard, my guest, well, you won't have, I mean, you've just heard the guest, but you won't know who she is. My guest this week is Jen Tierney. Now, I met Jen on the internet last year when I was a guest on her erstwhile podcast, How to Make a Memory. And she now has a new podcast, which is called Our Parents Did What? And you'll find links to that in the show notes, but it's also at opdwpodcast.com. It's all about parenting. But this episode is all about food and British food in particular. So it is a topic close, certainly to my heart and to many others, I would assume. So that's all you need to know about that. Thank you, everyone who's been listening and commenting on last week's episode. That was Harry Potter with Kat Turner, top five Harry Potter characters. If you've not heard that, then scroll back in the archives or go to listenvypod.com. Where you will also find out how to find us on all of the socials. We are on more of the things now. There's a little Instagram thing there and a little YouTube thing. So find us, tag us, follow us, link to us, at us, come at us. It's all good. And you know, let people know that you're listening to us, because the more people do, the nicer time we'll all have. Yes. Okay, very good. Well, that's all of the information I have for you. So let's get straight on with this episode. This is Jen Tierney and our top five favourite British foods. You describe yourself as an unapologetic Anglophile.
I do.
I mean, I sort of feel like I should apologise. I mean, but that's just, you know, current history being what it is, but also past history being what it is. What is it about Anglos that you file?
I mean, I think it's probably when I was younger. This is like the most cliched answer anyone could ever give. I feel really embarrassed about it. But when I was in high school, maybe, a friend of mine was just obsessed with BBC's production of Pride and Prejudice and was like, you have to watch it. And I was like, I don't know. I don't really like British TV. I don't really like, you know, fill in the blank. Just like, yeah. I don't like long period dramas. I don't particularly like Jane Austen, just like blah, blah, blah. And I sat down and I watched it and I went, oh my God, this is amazing. And I loved it. And then began my like lifelong commitment to watching, listening to, reading anything that has ever come out of Great Britain. Just like,
wow.
All the classes I could take in college. I watch as many British shows as I can, sometimes multiple times, which I probably shouldn't. Yes. And I've only been to England twice, and not until I was an adult. And now the company that I work for is based out of Brighton. So,
oh, wow.
So I was just there a few months ago. And the first time I had been there, I was only there for like 2 days. And so I didn't get a real chance to explore the culinary scene.
Mm.
And then when I was there this time, I was there for 5 days. And I was like, I'm going to have every single quintessential British meal I can while I'm here.
Yes.
And I was mostly successful. There's like one major dish that I missed. But now I feel like I can really speak to it. I don't have to like try to cook my own versions at home and pretend like it's real. I really went to shops that really had these dishes that I was excited to try.
So when you're cooking them at home, like how are they received?
I mean, pretty good. I feel like, so One of the ones that I grew up with and didn't even realize was a British dish until much later was my mom used to make shepherd's pie all the time. And so I made it as an adult all the time because it's very easy and it's very tasty and it kind of includes all your basic things that you need to have in a meal. And I feel like most of the British meals that I really enjoy are like that, where like they have a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I find something, like I remember watching a lot of the, I think you guys call it something differently than we do, but the British baking show.
Oh yeah. The Great British Bake Off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So, seeing that and watching all of the different things that that get made on that show and trying those out at home, some of them, not all of them, because I wouldn't call myself anything more than an amateur baker. Mm-hmm. I think they've been relatively well received. My kids are still little, so they're a little bit picky, and they'll try most things, but they're not in love with much of the more advanced cooking that I do. And then my husband just doesn't have much of a sweet tooth, mm-hmm. so I have to be careful with what I make for him. He does really love a crumpet, and I make those.
Yep, yep.
Those are really easy to make, which is delightful. And then if I make like a savory popover, like a popover with rosemary in it, he tends to like those. And then he really loves to watch video cooking tutorials from folks like Gordon Ramsay and some of those big British names in the culinary scene. And so for Christmas, the last few years, he's made beef Wellington and things like that. Cool. So he tends to, he does a lot of interesting British cooking as well. But not because it's British. Mm-hmm. I do it because it's British. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's British. Joe's just like, this looks really good. I'm going to make it.
I feel like I need to fill in some blanks because when you said popover, mm-hmm. I didn't know what that was. It's completely a legitimate thing. I just had no idea. It's similar to a Yorkshire pudding.
Yes, it is. It's very similar. Yeah. Yes,
Yorkshire pudding. I mean, I know from a Yorkshire pudding. That's fine. But I was I was hitherto unfamiliar with a popover, and now I'm acquainted. So that's good. Thank you.
There you go.
Well, why don't we start off then with what has got to be your undisputable number one?
Oh my goodness. All right. So this was, to be fair, very, very hard for me. So my absolute favorite thing is afternoon tea or high tea. I think the reason why I love it so much is not all of the individual pieces, mm-hmm. but sort of like the tradition of it, the ritual of it, the fact that all of these things have to be part of it. And when I was there and I walked into a little tea shop on like a gloomy day in February, mm-hmm. I like sat down and I ordered myself a tea and I got a scone and I was just like, oh my gosh, there's clotted cream in front of me. I was like in another dimension. I was just like, it was like going on a date with this person I've had a major crush on for decades.
Oh, that's adorable.
It was great, but I was all alone.
Oh, all alone with your scone. What is now the crucial question that will divide so many people, mm-hmm. is, I'm going to assume you put jam on there, on your scone/scone.
So I did. I mean, it was there in front of me. Sure, I couldn't, you know, I tasted all the different things that were in front of me. But I didn't very often combine toppings. I like did clotted cream on one bite and then the next bite I'd do some jam. I think there was like a lemon curd, mm-hmm. and I put that on, you know, so it was like, but I didn't want to mix,
yep.
the flavors. I don't know why. I think that's probably just a weird part of the way I consume food.
You were going for a sort of a purity of experience, and also you wanted to tour the flavors. You wanted to take your mouth on a little journey, and I can understand that.
That's right. That's right.
The reason I thought I'd bring it up is there is a nationwide, I mean, just as there is a nationwide debate about whether it's scone or scone, there is also a nationwide debate about whether you put the cream on first and then the jam, or the jam and then the cream.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I have other interests.
I can give you. Yeah, of course. I can give you sort of the American version of this debate, which is when you make peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, of course.
So I don't know. I believe peanut butter and jelly is not nearly as popular over there as it is here.
No.
But it's a pretty like American staple.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I learned recently, I had made some jam from, I went blueberry picking with my kids. I made blueberry jam when I came home and I went to make them sandwiches. And I put the peanut butter down first. And then I put the jam on top and I closed the sandwich.
Yeah, that's the correct way to do it.
As they were, right? So, but as they bit down, all the jam leaked out because it wasn't being absorbed by the bread. It was just sliding right through the peanut butter.
Oh, I hadn't thought
of that. So I went, oh no, jelly first. Yeah, it's like, oh no, jelly first, then the peanut butter.
Oh yeah, because otherwise you create a sort of sandwich based entropy that is just it decays in your mouth. It just goes to chaos. I hadn't thought about the structural integrity. That's really crucial.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it really comes down to like when you're eating a scone. Mm. Oh my gosh, I feel so saying that. So when you eat a scone, you're putting it on top. You're not sandwiching it. Mm. So it doesn't like the pressure of your holding it doesn't force everything to fall out.
Yes. Yes.
So.
Yeah. The top set of teeth are doing a lot of work there to keep things in place.
Keep everything.
Very important job.
Keep everything the way it needs to be. Oh my gosh.
So did you have the little sandwiches and the little, you know, little cucumber sandwiches and things with your afternoon tea?
I didn't have them in Brighton. Mm-hmm. I've had them. So I live in Boston or just north of Boston, and in Boston, which is very, you know, like we love our colonial roots in Boston. And so there are a number of places that you can go to have high tea in Boston. But they are absurdly expensive. Mm. Like it's going to set you back like $100 to go have high tea.
Goodness me.
And so, so I have been to have high tea in Boston before and have had all the little fancy sandwiches and things. And it's been quite nice, but that is like a very special occasion that I have only done like two or three times because it just it's so expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. well, that's a very good choice. I hadn't even occurred to me. And I've gone for the afternoon tea before. And it's yes, I absolutely get it. No argument from me. My number one is slightly less fancy. I mean, it's probably the least fancy of all the things. But it's my number one, and it's fish and chips.
Oh, there you go. So I don't particularly like fish. Mm. So that's why fish and chips wouldn't end up on my list. But the one that I was like really, really struggling not to have as number one was chips.
Yeah.
Because my favorite food on the planet in any culture is a potato that's been fried.
Yes.
Like just, it doesn't matter. Like that's just my favorite thing. And the first time I went and had chips in England, in London, I was like, oh, I've arrived. It was, it was a transcendental experience.
Absolutely.
So, anytime like chips are referenced in pop culture, I'm just like, woo,
yes,
this is great.
Amen to that. well, I'm sort of with you because so, the responsibility of having to build a definitive list is you know, it weighs somewhat heavily on my mind. And I'm not, I very, very rarely have fish and chips. I only do it if it's a particular place where, no pun intended, place. If it's a, you know, particular fish, chippy, where they're like, the fish here is really good, you know, it's by the sea, it's fresh caught and all that kind of stuff. Then I'm like, okay, I'll play ball. But usually... Yeah. I go for a battered sausage or a saveloy.
Mm.
Now you see the saveloy and chips. I think it's superior. Either a saveloy or a battered sausage, but it's sort of with the battered sausage. It's sort of golden brown food meets golden brown food that's been deep fried.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. I mean, it's the best of Britain. Yeah. Like really.
Yes.
So what is you'll have to school me a little bit here. What is a saveloy?
Saveloy with an L. I think saveloy. It's very similar to what you would call a kielbasa.
Oh yeah,
it's a big old,
I love a kielbasa.
Yeah, big old sausage. I think it's yeah. similar from what I've seen. And it's long, very bendy, very flexible. And the skin it's quite peppery, and the skin's got this sort of toughness to it. And when you break through, it's very satisfying. And the meat is very dense, but it's quite mushy. It's not as coarse as a normal sausage.
Oh, good.
And it goes really, really well with chips.
Of course.
So, yeah. So
I think I would argue you could say that about most things.
Yes. Yes. I think and chips is definitely, what we're going to have to go for. So, yes. All right.
Yes.
I like that. It is your choice, but it is and chips. So that's fine.
And chips.
What is your number two?
So go past chips. Mm-hmm. So the next thing on my list, and this is something I didn't have until just February of this year. It's something that I have coveted for like, I don't know, since I was in my teens, mm-hmm. was a Cornish pasty. It was,
oh, I'm so happy.
It was delicious.
Oh.
It was so good. I don't have words for it. It was so good.
Aren't they amazing? They're absolutely amazing.
They're so good.
Yes. Oh, I'm so happy. That's my number three.
Oh, good. Oh my gosh. I just feel like, I don't know. The history behind them is fascinating. The flavor of them is tremendous. They're relatively easy to make. I've made them,
what?
And they're not quite hard to make.
Wow.
They're wonderful. And I feel like it's Britain's version of what so many other countries have done. Mm. You know, like there's an empanada, there's a calzone, mm-hmm. you know, everybody's got their fold some dough, put some stuff inside of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think I've ever had such a satisfying meal as like lunch on a Tuesday that was a Cornish pasty. It was just,
was it warm?
So good. It was, yeah.
It's absolutely.
I got potato and cheese. Mm-hmm. I think it was very good. But I went into this little shop that in Brighton. It was maybe just called like the Cornish pasty mm-hmm. shop or something like that. And I walked in and there was this big, you know. I was with a couple people and they were like, "Oh, now if you really want to experience some current British conflict, I guess, or like, you know, big countrywide debate," they were like, "you have to try the sausage roll and the vegan sausage roll." And I was like, okay. So I tried each of those two, and those were quite good, but not as good as the pasty.
So I say this with appreciation for the food and for you and for the culture. And I don't mean this to, I'm just going to have to say the words mm-hmm. and then we'll do the mitigation afterwards. I think what you went to is a chain, because there is a chain called the pasty shop, and they are very good. I often, if I'm going on a long train journey, there is a the pasty shop, in our main city centre train station, and I will often get my lunch slash half of breakfast there, and just sit and eat that on the train because they are fantastic and they come out warm and they're great. Mm-hmm. So I think on a Cornish pasty level, I would say, because you can get like a traditional Cornish pasty and that's got meat, potatoes, carrots, and a few other things, and it's very very yes. densely packed. But if you go to Cornwall, or if you go to, there's actually some places in Wales, and I can't remember what they have, a similar thing. It's almost exactly the same, but they have a slightly different name. And if when you get them, when they're sort of made by hand, sort of small batch stuff, it just tips it even more over the edge. But you absolutely made a good decision there.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably the best choice that I could see within my vicinity. Yeah. Because one of my coworkers, I was like, okay, listen, I'm here one more day and I want to have one more great, culinary experience while I'm here. And this guy, I think he pulled a fast one on me.
No.
I think he may have been sincere. It's hard to tell. But he was like,
it's so hard to tell.
If you're going to, I just could not tell. And I was like, okay, so where are we going? And he was like, I'm taking you to Greg's.
No!
And I thought to myself, oh, great. It's like a guy who owns a little shop and his name is Greg. This is great. It's going to be this little local mom and pop place. And I walk in and I'm like, this is a 7-Eleven. Where have you taken me? I was so like, I was deeply offended.
Yeah. I mean, he did what I would have done exactly the same thing. I would have said, look, if it's your last day, I've got to take you to Greg's. That's because when you said vegan sausage roll, it's Greg's who do the vegan sausage roll.
Oh yeah, of course.
So I was thinking
for a dollar.
Yeah,
for a pound.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all fine. Greg's is,
fine is being generous, let's be honest. I didn't die from the food.
No, indeed.
There's that.
They do.
I had like...
They do a cheese and onion... I think they... Sometimes, some places they call it pasty, some places call it a slice. It's cheese and onion slice, and it is... It is just melted cheese in pastry, and it is delicious.
Yes. I had that.
Yeah.
I had that in the vegan sausage
there you
roll,
go.
And it was very good, but I think I didn't eat it quite fast enough. So by the time I was on my last few bites, it had sort of started to congeal.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, this is a terrible experience.
Yeah, it's already been there for about 12 hours anyway, so it's just, it's just been under a lamp.
At least.
Just some cheese sitting under a lamp
goodness.
For ages. You made a very good choice, I think, with not just with Cornish pasty, obviously, but with the choice of place. I approve. Well, that was my number three. So my number two, and you'll struggle to find. I mean, you can't just walk out with one of these. You've got to go to a pub, or you've got to have your mum make it for you. Or in my case, my dad, because my dad makes them. It's a Sunday roast.
Oh, great choice on my list too.
Yeah. It's proper comfort food. If you're lucky, you get about two or three different types of potato. Your roast potato and your mash, and a few other bits of veg. Maybe, if you're lucky, maybe some cauliflower cheese. Mm-hmm. And... perhaps if it's Christmas, then some sprouts or Easter. The meat's there, and it's chicken, or maybe it's beef. Very rarely have had beef in our family, but it was usually chicken. And it's great. And there's the gravy, and the gravy is everywhere, and everything's covered in gravy, and everything tastes delicious. It's good. The only problem with a Sunday roast is that you run the risk of getting what I like to call the lying roast potato. The roast potato that lies, which is the parsnip.
Because
the roast parsnip will nestle there amongst your roast potatoes and go, look at me, I'm glistening and I'm golden brown and I'm waiting for you, and you take a bite and it's like, ah, God, it's parsnip! That's the only thing, but it is a great choice.
You've completely defined and captured the exact experience I had when I was I went into like this little local pub where it was Sunday night, so like that's just what everybody was ordering, and it was a beef side roast, and they had that pile of vegetables and the potatoes and the Yorkshire pudding, which was so good, and the gravy was amazing. And I remember reaching down, and like I'm a very strange eater, I think. Like, when I describe it to people, I'm like, this is weird. In my head, it's totally normal. But I always save my favorite things on the plate for last. Mm-hmm. So I'll eat all the stuff. Like, the very first things I eat are the things I don't think I'm going to enjoy as much. And then, I make my way towards the things I'm going to really
Absolutely.
Love. So potatoes being my favorite food, I, save them for the very end. And there was one stray parsnip on my plate. And it looked just like all the potatoes. And I had eaten everything else on the plate, and I had loved everything so much. And I like, I'm like, I'm going to enjoy this last bite so much.
No.
Hum. It was a parsnip. I was so disappointed.
Heartbreaking.
Because then that was the flavor that I was left with at the end of my delicious, perfect Sunday roast meal.
Oh. Oh, that's now your abiding memory. That's just not fair,
right?
Is it?
I know.
It is marvelous. And I can't believe I forgot about Yorkshire puddings. Did you have stuffing?
I think it did it had something that I guess was like stuffing adjacent. This was not, I mean, to be fair, I looked up about like 15 of the best places to get a Sunday roast in Brighton. And this was not on that list.
Right.
But all those other places were either too far away or were closed already. Like they only did Sunday roast until like 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And it was like 9 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. So, cause I was on America time. Mm-hmm. So I just went into like this little corner pub, mm-hmm. and I don't know, it was fine, but a lot of people in there who had had one before, they were like, this is just okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I like it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's you're leaving yourself open for the next time you visit. You can book ahead and just keep improving the experience each time.
So
now,
exactly.
You know, you know what you like, and now you can just aim even higher. What's next on your list then?
All right, so the next thing on my list, so Sunday roast was number 4 mm-hmm. for me. So go back up to number 3. Number 3 was the full English breakfast.
Yeah.
So good. So what's really funny about this process to me, about like coming up with this list and sharing it with you, and the fact that we have so much crossover. My husband said to me last night when I was like, oh, I'm going to go on this show and I'm going to talk about my 5 favorite British foods. And he was like, are there more than 5 British foods? And I think that's what we're discovering right now. So we have the same thing.
Oh, don't you worry. I've got plenty more. Cause I knew we'd have lots of agreement in the first few. So, yeah. So I've got plenty more and possibly some that you might not have tried. So yes, but this, yeah, talk
oh,
to
I'm
me
so
about,
excited.
About the wonders of the, actually, I just want to, cause obviously, oh, you know, this is on my list. Well, this is number 5 for me. And I have, a slight addendum to this, which is the English, Irish or Scottish breakfast. Because
yes.
there are subtle variations and, the Scottish breakfast
yes,
can
are.
Have haggis. Often the Irish might have white pudding as well as black pudding. But talk to me about your mm-hmm. quintessential full English.
Yeah. So, well, I've unfortunately only have had it the mm-hmm. once. I've tried to like duplicate it here at home, but that's it. It's useless.
Your
bacon's
different.
To like go out to a pub and get it.
Yeah.
And So I was in London and I was right on the Thames and it was like 9 o'clock in the morning and my husband and I were jet lagged and we went into just this little pub that, you know, I don't even know why they were open, I guess only to serve English breakfast. And it was, I don't normally eat a tomato on its mm-hmm. own. A tomato to me has always been a condiment. But the English breakfast changed my mind. So much. I was like, oh, this is great. I love this tomato. It's grilled. It's tasty. Mm-hmm. And I've never thought to have like beans
yeah.
with breakfast. Wow.
It's a revelation.
There's so much about it that's just so tasty. And there's some meat and there's some protein. And that's the thing. You guys know how to put everything on the plate that will satisfy a person. Just like, oh, what else could we put on here that will make a person go, ah, now this feels complete, you know? And so
yeah.
So yeah.
What is your position on black pudding? Where do you stand on black pudding?
So the English breakfast that I had mm-hmm. maybe was not actually a full English because it did not have black
okay,
pudding.
Okay, I mean, yeah, it is optional. It's not always
yeah.
That's fine.
So I have yet to have black pudding.
Okay.
I'm sure that if it were in front of me and someone did not say to me, this is black pudding, and I tasted it, I'm of the mind that I would probably like it because mm-hmm. I'm more of a texture eater than anything else. And it sounds like it's probably just like a piece of meat.
It's really dense.
In its texture. Yeah. So I'm sort of like, oh, it'd probably be all right.
Mm.
But I think if I knew, if somebody said, here's a piece of black pudding, won't you try some? I'd maybe be like, I will give it like the tiniest little chipmunk nibble. And then I will go, that was nice. No, thank you for more.
I'm good. Yeah, it's something of an acquired taste. I think, I'm not sure if this is accurate, but I feel like in terms of kind of content, liver might be the closest thing because it's very irony.
It's just
yeah, fried blood.
Because it's blood. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's I mean, I'm not gonna go for bat for black pudding, but it's absolutely worth a go. Is what I'll say. It is worth a go.
All right.
But I was very pleased when I was in Scotland and had the Scottish breakfast that I'm pretty sure the black pudding was replaced with a little bit of haggis and haggis. Yeah. I don't know if we will get to it, but that is on my list. But it's further down.
Is not on my
list. Absolutely fine. That's fine. All right. So this one, I wonder if you have had. So next on my list is the Balti.
I've never had that. I've never even heard of that.
Lovely. Okay. Brilliant. So some people may hear this. Some people from England, but not Birmingham, where I'm from, may hear that and think, what are you trying to say? The Balti is British. It is, I believe, Pakistani in origin, and it made its way. The origin of the name is somewhat disputed. Some people say that it is to do with the dish that it's cooked in. Some people say that there's a place called Baltistan, which I think is in Pakistan. But the word has Portuguese origins. Like, it's all over the place, but it's basically a curry. It's a particular type of curry, and it's quite. It's usually mild, so it's not it's got spice in it, but it's not a hot curry. And you can go for a chicken and mushroom is a good one, or a lamb balti. Often tikka is in there as well, so you might have a chicken tikka balti. But the reason that we sort of claim it as being British is it made its way over in the 60s, and it first started getting cooked in England in a place called Attills, I believe, which is in my home city. And we are the place that does the Balti, and we have a place known as the Balti Triangle, which is just a little area full of Balti restaurants. And it is, I think, do you like... Have you had much in the way of sort of an Indian curry as opposed to, you know?
Yeah. So the last thing on my list is a curry. We could say chicken tikka masala because that tends to be the most quintessential one, but any sort of a curry. I mean, I love Indian food here in America. I love making it myself, but I've never had such good curry as when I was in London.
Yeah.
It is tremendously good.
Absolutely. So I really think then you would enjoy a Balti. It is very, it's one of those that it's very pleasurable because you almost can't go too wrong because it's not going to blow your head off. It's not going to be, some kind of horrible flavor. You know, you go for a lamb and spinach or a chicken and mushroom. There's lots of these nice little combinations. And then
that sounds
you
great.
Get a naan bread. And if you're feeling particularly... like you're a meat fancier, then you can go for a keema naan, which is a naan bread with meat inside it, which is just insane. And that is just, it's good, and it comes in this big sort of, it's like a wok, and that's what it comes in, and that's what some people say is the Balti. And that goes high on my list because it's just great. So there you go. What have you got next?
I think we ended up getting all of mine.
Okay, lovely.
At one point or another. Yeah.
Well, this is exciting. So I'm going to throw out some others then. I've got a cheese board.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
It's often what I will go for. It's not, it's not a meal, but it sort of had to go on there as part of a meal. So often I will forego a dessert in place of a cheese board. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Yeah. So good. Shepherd's pie, you already mentioned. Bangers and mash, very simple.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I didn't get to have while I was there that was on my list.
Okay.
I was very sad I didn't get to have it.
Yeah, I think It's one of those where there's so little variation, and it's kind of just some sausages and some potatoes. I think the other things we've talked about, there's greater variation, and I think once you've had it, you've had it. Then there was haggis, and then have you had or heard of Welsh rarebit?
I've heard of it. I've never had it. I don't exactly know what it is. I think I always assumed it was a rabbit.
Yeah, that would make sense. Because it certainly sounds like it. Apparently there is an alternate spelling, which is Welsh rabbit. It's basically... So in the same way that a croque monsieur is a fancy cheese, toasted cheese sandwich, or grilled cheese, as you call it, this is the same, but an open grilled cheese. And apparently the Welsh have sort of cornered that end of the market, and they've got their own name for it. But it's a particular... it's all to do with the things that you add to it, and I think there's herbs and spices and things that you might pop on top to just season it a little bit. But it's basically cheese on toast, and it's good.
Oh my gosh, I love a good cheese sandwich of any kind. Any variety of cheese and bread is, oh man, I've never had that, but I feel like it should be on the list.
Things like I'll tell you what, you see, it's one of the things I haven't discussed, but a cold winter's night, maybe you're still hungry for whatever reason, or you're staying up for a little bit, and maybe you're gonna snuggle in and watch a movie or something, and you pop a couple of pieces of bread under the grill, and you slice up some cheese. You don't want to grate it, you want a sort of fairly decent thick slice of cheese, and that just goes under the grill for a couple of minutes, and it's just maybe a bit of Worcester sauce. And it is just, it's so wonderful and comforting. And beans on toast. The nice thing about cheese on toast is you can eat it with one hand, which I recently tried doing beans on toast, and you can't.
No, that's just a big mess. I've done that too. I've made some beans on toast here at home, and it's just, you end up with beans everywhere.
Yeah absolutely. But it's cheese on toast. It's just lovely. Okay, so we've got a short list of six. You know what? Really, really, we haven't. Let's be honest, because based on our combined knowledge and understanding here, I think we can probably take the Balti off. But what we've got in no particular order so far is afternoon tea, chips, and chips, Cornish pasty, Sunday lunch, a full English breakfast, and then the bonus Balti. Is there anything there that you think doesn't need to be on the list? Because you say you like curry, but it hasn't made your top five.
Well, so the reason why it was lower on my list, like I would put a curry above a shepherd's pie, but the reason I did not was because I wasn't sure if you would consider a curry British.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't put it on there, but because you put a Balti on there, I'm like, oh, well, maybe we should just put curry on there and take off the shepherd's pie, which is good, but I would argue not quite as good as a curry.
Excellent. Okay. Oh, that. Well. But there, you see, this is difficult, because it's then, how does it stack up against the other items that we've got here? Because we've got,
I know,
this is really hard, Jen, because we've got a really good list here and something's got to go. We've got to make top five and something's got to go.
Well, so, I mean, you did not have afternoon tea on yours at all. And it may be because that is less of a meal and more of like a fun thing that you do. So I could be convinced to jettison that, although it does mean that we now will not have anything sweet on our list, which maybe is fine. Maybe this is a savory food list.
Well, we could go for the original interpretation of the Cornish pasty, in that when it was made for miners, the bottom of it would have your dessert in it, and you would throw away the pastry because it was deadly.
Yes,
you know.
We could do that. I would be comfortable with that. We could start off with the Cornish pasty, which is a solid number one choice, I think, for me at least. I think that the only thing that put afternoon tea over the top for me was just that it's so ritualistic.
Yes.
But I love the history of the pasty. So.
I'm going to throw us a curveball.
Okay.
And I'm going to suggest, now we've got Cornish pasty, which it can be a meal on its own, but it might depend mm-hmm. when you have it, because we also have and chips.
Yes.
Might I suggest we go for uh-huh. Cornish pasty and chips, which is a meal I've had several times and very much enjoy.
Really?
Oh, yes. It is. It's a.
I feel like that's a lot of starch.
Oh yeah, yeah. It is. It is. It is an evening meal. That has. So, all right. I'll tell you a little story. To prove to you that this is a thing, and I haven't just tried to combine two things. There was a meme in the office where I used to work, which my dad unwittingly created when he left me a voicemail a few years ago, and they'd been. Him and my parents had been to Cornwall, and they'd come back, and as they often do, they bought a bunch of pasties and stuck them in the freezer, and they had a couple to keep, and so they had one each, and then one for me, and so my dad left me a voicemail saying, "Would you like to come over for a delicious award winning Cornish pasty and some chips?" And there was something in the way that he said. And some, like, he really lent into, and some chips, that became like a meme. And now anytime anyone brings up chips in my family or the office where I used to work, someone would invariably pipe up, and some chips. So I think we can save afternoon tea, because we absolutely yeah. can combine Cornish pasty with chips.
All right.
All we've got to do now that we've got our five... Mm-hmm. I think I'm not sure where I want to put some of these items. So at the moment we've got Balti, full English, Sunday lunch, Cornish pasty, and afternoon tea. You were sort of, I think you were fairly, you wanted the afternoon tea to be up there quite high. Is that right?
I would say that because it didn't make your list, I would concede to put it lower and put things that we both agreed higher.
Okay. All right. Part of me is like, you know, full English has got like part of what we're discussing in the name. And it's also the start of the day.
Yes.
We could almost, I tell you what. Right, here we go. This is almost the story of a weekend. So you start off with a full English breakfast. You then have afternoon tea. And then in the evening you have, on the Saturday evening there, you have... Whatever. You have a Cornish pasty and chips. And then the next day you go out and you go out drinking with your friends and you have a Balti. And then the Sunday, so you got Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Sunday, you have a Sunday lunch.
Yeah.
So our top five. Number one, full English breakfast. Number two, afternoon tea. Number three, Cornish pasty and chips. Four, Balti. Five, Sunday lunch. Jen Tierney, do you consent to this list?
I think this is a great list and I want to go on this vacation.
Yes! It is a long weekend from heaven, sent from heaven.
Oh my goodness. Oh wow. You know, next time I'm there, I'm going to find out where you are. Cause you're far away from Brighton, I think, right? You're on the other side of London.
I am. I'm about 3 hours by train, two trains.
Yeah. So I feel like if I can get myself close enough to you, we'll just, we'll get together and we'll go get all these meals.
Yep. We'll do the List Envy Weekender. We'll get t-shirts printed up. Like, it's going to be a whole thing. It's going to be a tradition. I mean, we can't do it every year because we'll all have heart attacks.
No.
Maybe every 5 years.
I'd like to survive long enough to have a couple of them.
So before we wrap this up, you make a lot of food. What's your favorite thing out of this? Not just this list, but British foods. What is your favorite to make?
Oh, huh.
I've put you on the spot there.
Yeah, I think that the thing that I've gotten the most satisfaction of making, because it's simple, everyone in my family loves it, and it's very utilitarian. So I have a sourdough starter that I keep in my fridge to make bread and pancakes and things like that with. And I've had it for like 4 years now. It's a very, you know, old loved sourdough starter. And when I have extra and I go to feed it, that extra stuff that I would normally throw away, I've now started using to make crumpets. And it, I love making something that my family loves to eat. And usually most of the other things I've tried, they're like, oh, this is okay, but don't go through the trouble of making it again. It's okay. But the crumpets, they're like, oh, I'll have these anytime you make them. So
yes.
So yeah,
sourdough, lovely. Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we've got the honorable mention of the shepherd's pie, which I was very much on my list because it's, yes, it's delicious. And it is. lamb is possibly second to chicken, the best of the meats.
Yes.
All right. Well, when you're not making delicious foods, you've also been making podcasts, and you had a show which is, I guess, now on hiatus called How to Make a Memory.
Yes.
Which I was very pleased to have been on last year, or was that even?
Yeah,
was it last year?
I think it was last year. Yeah,
and it was a lovely experience, and that's how we got to know each other. But you've got something new in the works.
I do. So my sister-in-law Diane and I, we recently both had babies. I had my third, and she had her first, my little niece. Yeah. And so what invariably happens, I find, and she has found, after you have a baby, is suddenly your life becomes about being a mom. And as wonderful as that is, it can be sort of, you know, it makes you feel like the scope of you has shrunk quite a bit. And that you are not yourself so much anymore. You are mom. Mm. And so the two of us were sort of looking for a project to kind of make us feel a little bit more like ourselves again.
Yes.
So I had this idea sort of brewing for a little while to do a show on the history of parenting and child rearing. And I don't know if you're familiar with the show Sawbones, which is about medical history. Mm-hmm. And there's also This Podcast Will Kill You, mm-hmm. which is about the history of diseases. And I like those shows where you have two people and they're talking about some fascinating thing from time, from history, mm-hmm. And what led up to the creation of it or the tradition of it or whatever. So one good example of this is like the car seat. And today, the way car seats work is, you know, they're very safe. There's 5-point harnesses. It's just very, like, very safe. And there are laws around them. And if you look at pictures of car seats from 30 or 40 years ago, they're death traps. Like, it's a wonder. It's a wonder we ever let children be in cars. And it was not unusual for children to, like, I remember hearing stories of people from my parents' generation on a trip home from somewhere in the evening, they just kind of like lay on the floor of the car, or, you know, like, wow, when they're 3-4 years old, they didn't have to be in a car seat.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's sort of talking through the history of some of these things that are just part of our lives, that and how they came to be. So we're hoping to get that launched in August or September of 2019. And yeah, it's going to be called Our Parents Did What? So it should be fun.
Yes, absolutely. There will be a link to something in the show notes, but in the meantime, where is a good place to point people's eyes and ears?
Sure. Or noses. So the website is it's the acronym OPDWpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. And I will also have my current podcast, which is sort of like it's sunsetting, is called How to Make a Memory. And on that show, which you can find right now on any podcatcher, that I will have like an episode where I introduce the new show. So if you subscribe to that, you'll hear about the new one.
Wonderful. And I would I'd urge you to go and listen back, because Jen is a charming podcast host, and I thoroughly enjoyed being a guest on How to Make a Memory.
You were a very wonderful guest.
Well, it was a very easy conversation. Thank you very much for having another very easy conversation, because I'm now starving.
Oh yes, but, me too.
and I'm about to go and record an event, but I'm probably going to try and have a Balti afterwards because, you know, that's what you do.
Excellent. Yes, of course.
Well, Jen Tierney, thank you very much for being on List Envy, and come back anytime.
Thank you very much. I look forward to it.